The following is a recording of the Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We are located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. We are also located on the web at www.tpuuf.org. Please come visit us.
Good morning. My name is the Reverend Larry Pierce, and I want to welcome you to Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. We're located in Collegeville, Pennsylvania. Whether you are from far or near, wherever you may be on your life journey, wherever you may be on your spiritual journey, we welcome you. However you express your journey, we welcome you. Whomever you love, whomever loves you, we welcome you this morning into this ever-expanding circle of love, compassion, and justice-seeking people. If you happen to be visiting us for the first time or are new to us, you will notice the link to our virtual connection card in the chat. Feel free to click on that link and fill out the information on that online card anytime during the service, and this allows us an opportunity to connect with you and to answer any questions you might have about Unitarian Universalism or Thomas Paine Unitarian Universalist Fellowship. This morning, I want to take a moment to light a candle to honor a member of our congregation who died this week. And it's very sad to come to the realization that she's no longer with us, but that the memory of her still lights within our hearts and among us. So Adele McDaniel passed away this past week. And I got these flowers in memory of Adele because I think of her as someone who is like a mixed bouquet. She brought together a strong intelligence and a strong sense of feeling. She brought together a sense of science and of art. She herself had a certain kind of flair that I see in these flowers. And so to honor her, I light this candle. We will take a moment during the matters of the heart to pause and reflect on our own memories of Adele. The opening words come from a verse written by Samuel Longfellow that you'll see included in our gathering hymn. From hand to hand the greeting flows, from eye to eye the signals run, from heart to heart the bright hope glows, the seekers of the light are one. Now Preston will light our chalice.
Today, I light our chalice with words from Reverend Leah Ongieri. As I light this chalice on this Father's Day, may we give thanks for the fathers or father-like figures who represent for us the steadfast presence that holds us in love and launches us into the world. Whether we encounter it when we are small or already grown. Some among us have fathered in ways that will never be recognized or appreciated, that will never be counted in any official reckoning. Amid whatever gratefulness or difficulty we may experience on this day, may we remember to see and revel in the people who love and support and nurture and parent and father us, as we say their names aloud to ourselves, or type their names in chat, or say the names silently in the sacred chambers of our own heart. After I light the peace lamp, your response will be, and with all the people of the world. May peace be with us, and with all the people of the world.
Let's join together now in our gathering song, O Life That Maketh All Things New. You will see the lyrics on the slides Please join in when you're ready. To introduce this meditation that I've composed entitled Listening to the Echoes of Juneteenth, I want to just share just one statement of context about this holiday that is now being celebrated in a variety of ways around the country. And this is what I want to say. Unlike the popular myth told about this day, the Union troops did not come to inform enslaved folks that they were free 2.5 years after the emancipation was declared. They knew it. The troops, the Union troops, came to enforce that proclamation. General Granger arrived to forcibly liberate Black people from the intransigent slaveholders. And so they would rather not know that freedom had arrived. But freedom did arrive, not just through words, but through liberating actions. So let's join me, if you'd like to, in this meditation. O Spirit of Freedom, we would rather not know all the pains that our fellow humans have endured, the generational horrors of enslavement, and the ongoing terror and splashing waves of racism are all around us still. We want so much to declare a time of true jubilee, of freedom, as if it has fully arrived, but we would rather not know that we are constantly reminded that we are not there yet. On this day, may our collective heart open enough to hear the piercing echoes of those who suffer and die from racism's ugly, fatal power. Like one endless lamentation, we hear these words and know that freedom has not yet fully arrived. Ferguson, Mother Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church, Breonna Taylor, George Floyd, and so many more places. So many more names, yet they remind us that we are not yet there. Can our hearts even hold the sorrow or absorb our collective shame? O Holy One, we strain to hear your ancient call to liberate, to set the captives free, even as today there are forces that once more do not want to hear emancipation has actually been proclaimed. They continue their enslavement in insidious and undermining ways. They still strive to suppress voices and votes. They still endeavor to whitewash our painful history of racism and colonialism. They still turn away from the generational wounds that will not easily go away. They are all around us, and sometimes even within us. We'd rather not know. Can our hearts even hold the sorrow or absorb the collective shame? Holy One, you've told us that you have no need for our empty or pious words. You desire only our real demonstrations of carrying out justice and of loving mercy and of walking humbly towards all that is holy. Spirit of life, we dare to be relentless in our striving. We dare to recognize the resilience that is not ours alone, but rises up within and among us, so that we can join the chorus of those who have lived this tragic story, so that we can join in the procession of those who have sung these words to ennoble their faith and to empower their struggle. Sing a song full of the faith that the dark past has taught us. Sing a song full of the hope that the present has brought us. Facing the rising sun of our new day begun, let us march on till victory is won. Holy One, strengthen us to march on, to march with yes, to march till victory is won, till the steps of our march become a dance of real freedom. So may it be. Amen. Thank you.
So Larry asked if I wouldn't mind sharing a few thoughts on the topic of improvisation and fathering. And I thought that would be fun. And I thought it would be fun to go into it with the spirit of improvisation. And by that, I mean, when you look at improvisation in music, some people might think it's all made up on the spot and there's no plan. And that's not true at all. When it comes to improvisation in music, there's an understanding behind it of music theory, of chord progressions, of the style of the music that you're playing, of a great number of influences who came before you in that style. And all of that can inform what you're creating in a moment. So whilst I'm speaking without an explicit script I am following, I am speaking guided by numerous different things, whether that is the example set by my own father and seeing how he handled times of stress or times of difficulty and how that informs how I handle times of stress and times of difficulty, or as simple as I had the opportunity to go to through fantastic schooling to college and into an excellent out of college career opportunity. And one of the benefits of that was training specifically on how to speak on the spot without panicking about not having a script. And I would still say my father was largely responsible for me having that opportunity in the first place. Not only did we share the same alma mater, but he made a decision before I was ever born that was the goal. You will be able to go to school, no questions asked. And the only way I can thank him is to do the same in turn. So while there's some improvisation, certainly in my parenting, there's also a strong example set that I am endeavoring to follow and hope I can. My father had a temper, and he worked his whole life to manage his temper. I have a temper. I have worked my entire life to manage my temper. And the strongest moments of improvisation are the ones where I just want to blow my lid and I have to find a different response to the one that comes naturally. Because I've been through that. I've done it. I've experienced it. I know how little good comes from allowing that knee-jerk reaction to rule. But that's where my head goes. That's my temper kicks in, and the first thing I want to do is just pop my top and yell. And I know that's a dead end. So the question becomes, in the moment, what strategies can you employ? What sources of patience can you find to try to chart a different path and see how the reaction to that leads and see, is this better? Is this the same? Is this worse? And likewise, I'm sure I was a very challenging child, and I'm sure every child is a challenging child in their own ways. So anytime someone comes with you with this great parenting advice of, oh, you just do X, Y, and Z and everything will be great. Well, sure, for your kids. Absolutely. I don't doubt you at all, but your kids aren't mine. Now, you can learn. You can still take nuggets of truth from that advice, right? Because humans are pretty consistent animals in the grand scheme of things. And our similarities and our differences counterbalance in a lot of ways. But most of the time, you're thinking through all this advice, or at least I am. I don't want to speak for anybody else. And I'm trying to spot in the moment, where is the pattern? Where is the chord progression? Where is the reference to something that's come before that I can echo that may resonate with my audience being my children? And trying to pick that out on the spot and make the most of it might be one of the most challenging parts of parenting. But I think it's worthwhile. And I think it's a skill that I would care to develop further and hopefully manage to learn from not only my own father, but the other fathers in my life and take some of the best of what they had to offer along with my own creativity and set that as an example for a next generation so that they can grow up to be better and more than I was, keeping in mind that I am very grateful for everything that I am. And that, I think, in the long run, is how I'm going to measure my success as a father, is if through the easy days and the hard days, through the guidance and the creativity on the spot, I managed to put it all together and improvise being a dad one day at a time, and my kids don't grow up to hate me and they grow up to be better people than I am, I'm going to call that a win. I think that covers it for me today. Larry?
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mike. So my topic today, as you know, is improvising even when you don't have to. I came to this topic realizing that during this pandemic, we couldn't help but improvise because we had to. And I wonder with you what it would be like for us to savor what we've learned during this kind of enforced improvising. What is it that we can savor for our own lives and the life of our spiritual community? Thank you, Mike, for sharing your own experiences of how, even in the everyday approach to bothering, improvisation becomes an art where we are taking what it is that we have given, been given and learned, and we approach each encounter with whatever knowledge or skill that we have. But we also come to this empty and open moment, an opportunity to empty ourselves of whatever knowledge and skill that we've had, to the degree that our expectations don't always prevent us from really seeing what is before us and responding in our own unique ways, tweaking what we've been given, but also adding to it our own unique flavor. So in reflecting upon this topic personally, I was brought back to my own very short-lived career in improvisation in my late 20s. When I lived in Boston, I regularly attended a group that had practiced contact improvisation. Now, if you don't know what contact improvisation is, hang in there. Before your imagination goes wild, let me tell you what it is. Contact improvisation is a dance form that was developed in, I think, 1972 by Stephen Paxton. And it's a movement that's often described as physical dialogues that range from stillness to highly energetic exchanges between those who are in the room. And some say that the roots of contact improvisation are in dance or martial arts and meditation. And that makes a lot of sense to me when you experience it. It requires alertness and the ability to be aware of one's own movements in a space where others are often simultaneously responding to your movements. The freedom to move and to choreograph in the moment was not just creative and expressive as an experience, it was also a way to hone this acute awareness in ways that served me, I think, even in everyday life up to this moment. I loved these practice sessions. Now, in the room, you have to understand there would be those of various experiences and flexibility. So each person became an offer to respond to or to not respond to interact and to improvise movement together or to not interact or improvise movement. Not unlike life, I would say. Yet, my rising career in this form of improvisation came to a screeching halt when one night another dancer's enthusiasm got ahead of him and his foot came right down on my left foot really hard and very painfully. So I hobbled home. Now this is where I'm going for the sympathy vote. In the weeks that followed, I hobbled through a cold and snowy and icy winter in Boston with only a cane to steady me and occasionally a taxi cab to carry me. Do I have any sympathy? I see any sympathy there? Okay. So I never went back to those contact improvisation sessions, but of course, as many of you know, I continue to love movement and dance, and I'm still just somewhat a little cautious about that form of dance called contact improvisation. I still draw lessons in life, I believe, from my experiences of improvisation practice, both from contact improvisation and other experiences. So reminiscing about my short-lived career in contact improvisation made me curious enough to read recently some contemporary articles that outline things about its philosophy and its method and so forth. And I discovered that contact improvisation is thriving still worldwide in spite of my abandoning them decades ago. So there's one article in particular that caught my attention because of its relevance for this time that we're in right now and the connections it makes between the pandemic and how this form of improvisation intentionally plays with that creative tension between disorientation and orientation. We probably don't recognize as we move through our daily life how oftentimes we are oriented in a particular way and we become disoriented and we reorient again. We hardly recognize how oriented we already are from an early age to walk, to move, to talk, to interact in particular set ways. And these become unconscious and oftentimes automatic for us. But occasionally, a friend might point out to us, I could tell it was you that was coming by your walk, or I could hear your laugh in a crowded room. Each of us have our own signature, our own way of orienting ourselves, our voice, and our movements in the world. So in contact improvisation, disorientation is intentional. We may be as surprised by our own movements in response to what's occurring in the room as we are by those who are moving within that space with us. Improvisation requires responding to disorientation and reorienting ourselves until the next disorientation is offered to us. So the point is that during this pandemic, we've all had experiences of a time of disorientation at various degrees and various levels from one another. Whether we've liked it or not, this period of disorientation has forced us to improvise, to find new ways to do familiar things, to discover our stamina and our adaptability, our flexibility within so many restrictions due to lockdown, social distancing, and the unavailability of some of our activities. The contact improvisation dancer and author Zena Bibler writes, under many definitions, disorientation evokes a state of crisis that throws existing orders into question. Disoriented, we experience suspensions of our accustomed roots and routines or frames of reference. In the midst of a global viral pandemic, she continues, many people are certainly feeling the interruption of familiar ways of being, not to mention our ways of being in contact with others. And at the same time, she offers this more nuanced question. And I think it relates to the topic that I am raising with us this morning. What are we learning individually and collectively during this period of mass disruption? What alternative awarenesses and modes of relating to each other have we honed during this period? How might we sustain commitments to the care-based initiatives that have emerged during this time in response to the failure of some of our existing healthcare and economic support system? These questions arose during this disorientation period that's still certainly in play in our country. But asking these kinds of questions while we're still in the midst of the crisis are normal. But I don't think the questions go away because we're tending to reorient ourselves to what we are calling back to normal. I do think that there is still this open space before us, a precious kind of open space that we can take advantage of, where we either choose to attend or to ignore what we've learned in this past year, in 5 months. Now, I've thought about this whole process in this way. During this pandemic, we've been stretched like this, elastic. We've had to improvise and to make up things as we go along. We've had to respond to ever emerging situations and conditions around us. We've had to stretch our inner resources. And now that we're easing back to normal, there's a tendency to want to snap back like this elastic is designed to do. There's a tendency to want to return to what was and forget all the lessons that we've learned during this stretching time. You see, I believe we can learn some lessons about improvising that could still serve us personally, spiritually, and socially, even when we don't have to do so. We've stretched the elastic of our ways of doing things, and we do not just have to snap back and lose the awareness and the lessons that we've learned. How do we keep alive the personal, the social, the spiritual perspectives and skills that this time of necessary improvisation has awakened in us, at our church and in our lives, in our work lives? Since, as Unitarian Universalists, we are part of a tradition of creative religion, we flow in that stream that recognizes that our set ways are not the only ways, that the patterns and habits that were most familiar to us are not written in indelible ink, that our commitment as a faith tradition to the creative approach to religion and life allows us to build upon tradition. And at the same time, we practice the spiritual disciplines of improvisation, not just to adapt when we have to do so, but for the sake of continually growing our souls and the soul of our faith communities and our wider social communities. You know that hymn that we sang as our gathering song? I think it gives expression to our creative approach to our spiritual, our personal, and our collective life. That first verse reminds us or acknowledges that all around us is a blooming earth. And likewise, within us, in our thoughts, those thoughts continue to blossom as well, except when they don't. That verse says, O life that maketh all things new, the blooming earth, our thoughts within, our pilgrim feet, wet with thy dew, in gladness hither turn again. Or there are also these verses that I can kind of highlight in the lyrics, which I think point to a kind of improvisational approach to our spiritual life. One, in the joy of paths untrod, the freer step, the fuller breath, the wider horizons, grander view. We tend to think about improvising as a kind of a frill, and not a necessity in life. The author of The Art of Is, Improvising as a Way of Life, Stephen Nachmanovich, has made me aware of how much we take for granted the necessity of improvising every day. The example that Nachmanovich gives is his own surprise at learning that his writings and improvisation were actually being used in an aviation school in Argentina. You would think, he writes, that flying an airliner is a highly structured activity in which the skills needed to flow in a predictable way, yet to get to the plane to a predetermined place at the predetermined time, following the flight plan and the protocols, the pilot has to absorb and react to constant interruption by the unexpected. Just imagine it, flocks of birds, abrupt fluctuations of weather, behavior of other aircraft. He or she has to be comfortable being surprised by unforeseen events that are unfolding. That surprise has to somehow fit into the flow of the smooth activity of flying. So, it did surprise me to read that and to recognize that sometimes improvising is an absolute necessity, as it is for those aviators. But as pilots of our own life, I don't think it's any different. We either improvise or our spirits atrophy. In fact, in the spiritual life, disorientation and reorientation is what leads us to construct new meaning. Think about it. Think about the disruptions and the disorientations in your own life. I mean, really think about it. Oftentimes, these are the very fodder of our spiritual life. Take a moment now, if you would like, and think about a time of disorientation that in your own life that eventually led to greater clarity and even deeper meaning. You might even share it with us if you'd like in the chat. You can simply complete the sentence. It was the time when. It was the time when. So if you want to, you can articulate a time of disorientation that also led to greater or deeper meaning in your own life. Don't tell us the whole story. You're going to hog the chat. But put a little bit of a flavor of that experience for us, if you would like. We all have heard of the experience of Viktor Frankl, the author of Man's Search for Meaning. I think it's now called Search for Meaning. He spent a lifetime reflecting upon what allowed him and others to remain somewhat intact while suffering the atrocities of the concentration camps. His lessons are essential lessons for all of us, and I'll quote him. He says, this is a very familiar quote from him, "Between stimulus and response, there's a space. And in that space is our power to choose our response. In our response lies our growth and our freedom." That's what he came to understand in those concentration camps. That's what he came to understand as he watched those who were able to somehow stay just somewhat intact as they responded and kept informed about how they could respond rather just react to their experiences. Now, the human does not simply exist, but always decides what their existence will be, what they will become in the next moment. By the same token, every human being has the freedom to change at any instant. And that's Frankl's philosophy that I think is very much in line with understanding improvising in our own lives. So the times when we were disoriented, as you've been writing in the chat, those are times that can often lead to new meaning for each of us. Those are times when you can ask yourself, how did my own attitude and my own formed response to what was happening to me shaped how things actually unfolded? And thank you for sharing those responses in the chat. Because I realize it's common to most of our lives to have those periods of disorientation, but sometimes we haven't thought deeply enough about how our own response to the situation created what actually occurred or resulted from that experience. So spiritual community, I believe, is, if it's actually doing its deeper work, is always inviting us to consider our responses, to make choices, to improvise in response to life's joys and sufferings, to let go of the tried in order to honor the true that wants to emerge for ourselves and for our larger human community. So if we consider that improvising includes everyday spiritual practices, well, let me offer you three. The first is that anything can be an offer or an opportunity to improvise. We can participate or not in our own stuckness is the second one, and kick the butt, that's the third one, and I'll explain that one later. So first, anything can be an offer or an opportunity to improvise. In improvisation, anything can be used as a quote offer to improvise. An inanimate object can be the offer for a dancer to interact with that bowl or that piece of art as if it were an actual interactive partner. It can stir a certain kind of action or response. For a musician who's improvising, a sound may be given as an offer that initiates music that is prompted by that particular sound. And likewise in life, we have so many potential offers that come our way that when we are alert, when we're listening and we're available, they can set us on a path of interacting in some new ways, unless we do otherwise, unless we close down, don't allow ourselves to be alert or available to actually receive that offer, that inclination to try something new in response. Nachmanovich points out, and I'll quote, that the more we give ourselves over to these offers, the more we are able to give up control, the more we can discover all kinds of riches that otherwise might not have come our way. The composer Cornelius Cardew referred to improvising as kind of a great learning. Learning to be a better improviser goes hand in hand with learning to be a better human being, because both are contingent upon communicating with others and remaining open to the surprise that can occur. So lesson number two, we can participate or not in our own stuckness. Another dimension that keeps us from engaging with life in these ever-learning and improvising ways is when we say we are stuck. Nachmanovich draws upon some insights from his Zen teachers as he unpacks his own understanding of stuckness, not as a noun, but as a verb, something that we do, not something that we are. In other words, he prefers to say that we are sticking rather than we are stuck. He writes, stuck is a passive construction, not only of language, but of a person's reality. Sticking, when we recognize that we are actually sticking, it reveals that it is we who are doing the sticking. We who choose, whether consciously or unconsciously, to cling to the objects of our attractions and repulsions. Therefore, we have the power to dissolve some of this glue. Think about it. Think about those places where you say you are stuck. And without guilt, but with curiosity, ask yourself, and what am I doing to stick? What are the sticking activities that I'm engaged in that keeps me in this place? When we recognize that we participate in each moment with our sticking to whatever it is, our fixed ideas, our limiting practices, then when we recognize that we are participating in, then we are also free to engage in unsticking in the here and now. Lesson number three, kick the butt. Who's interested in hearing that one? Just give me a hands up on that. Okay, I was hoping you'd hang in long enough to hear it. So there's a popular game. I'm sure some of you may have played it in improvisation classes. It's called the yes and. So someone says something or moves in a particular way and you receive it as an offer and then you have to add to it. So that's the and. You add to whatever it is that you've received. So therefore, well, let's just play it right now. Therefore, I might say something like, the sun also rises. And then what would you say? You would start with and. So write it in the chat. The sun also rises and... Mike, would you mind reading some of those for me that you might see in the chat if I've got anyone playing along with me? The sun also rises and?
And it also sets.
Okay, yeah. Anyone else?
Yes, and so do we. The sun also rises and then Darth Vader walked in. Yeah. The sun also rises, so does the moon.
Yeah.
The sun also rises and I can't wait for this wonderful new day to begin.
Yeah, wonderful. Okay, well, I guess we could play all afternoon, but I'm going to probably have to move on here. But thanks for playing around. The point I really want to make is oftentimes we stymie the spiritual practice of yes and by saying literally out loud or in our own head, not yes and, but but yes, but. And then we raise whatever objection we might have. It's very conditioned, so conditioned that we often don't even recognize when we're doing it, unless we have that alert eye and that awareness of the improviser that recognizes that we're always in a place of response, and how we respond is really what critically adds to our experience. So here's the point. Sometimes when I hear someone say, yes, but, I often encourage them to kick the butt. Okay, so say that after me, kick the butt. Try it this week when you're hearing someone or recognizing someone is saying yes, but instead of yes, and. So now great things can come about through improvisation. One example I came across is when Martin Luther King Jr. stood before the crowds on August 28th, 1963. On that day, Dr. King had begun reading his prepared text. And seven paragraphs into the speech, Mahalia Jackson, the great gospel singer, broke into King's speech. And she said, "Tell them about the dream, Martin. Tell them about the dream." And at that moment, King pushed aside the notes and began improvising. And as an account of that day says, his written text did not mention dreams, but as he looked up at the crowd, he rolled into the rhythmic majesty of, "I have a dream." King was riffing on a part of an earlier speech he had given in Detroit. It didn't go so well, but in this moment, that "I have a dream" speech still resonates within us and among us. The words of that King improvised on the spot still ring in our hearts and ears. We identify him with those words. Those improvised words still awaken us beyond our slumber and comfortable way of thinking that the work of racial justice has been accomplished. We're still moving towards and working towards that dream. Those improvised words awaken us to what is, to what truly still is, and hopefully arouse us to consider not just what could be, but what is our work ahead. So friends, I ask you at this moment in your own life, what prepared text do you need to push aside so that you can more fully encounter what is and engage the spirit of this moment in your life? Think about it. What are the prepared text that you could push aside so that you can begin again to ride the waves of the heart and the spirit within you? Pause here for a moment so that we can each think about this before I conclude. Sometimes that prepared text is a kind of a continual story that we tell ourselves again and again and again, and never have re-examined it with conscious awareness or recognized the impact it has on limiting the horizon before us. So, my friends, I want to conclude by saying that rather than snap back like the elastic does so automatically in our lives or in our country or in our congregations, we need to claim the spirit of our creative approach to religion and life as Unitarian Universalists. We need to recognize that our congregations are places that are a creative laboratory of the spirit. So rather than snap back, I want to say snap to it. Don't let this moment pass you by. Snap to it. But let's remember the lesson that I learned in my short-lived career in contact improvisation. Improvising can be dangerous. Someone may step on your toes, but I say again, whatever obstacle you encounter or imagine you will encounter, don't snap back. snap to it. Say that phrase after me. Don't snap back, snap to it. Thank you. You know, you can see how I long to really be in the room and to actually hear your voices. So I'm just imagining them here in this Zoom service. And so we now move to our matters of the heart. And as I mentioned earlier, we're acknowledging today at the beginning of this Matters of the Heart, our member Adele McDaniel, who died this week. Let's take a moment in silence before I invite you to reflect on your own joys and sorrows. Just reflect on the light that was Adele, how that light shined in your life in whatever particular ways that it did. Let's imagine the warmth of Adele, how oftentimes she gave freely a hug to whomever she encountered. Let's recognize that that light was not just Adele's, but it was a light that she freely gave us, a light of warmth, a brightness, an attention to beauty and hospitality. And let's receive that light as a gift from Adele right now, as we pause in your own memories of her and whatever gifts you may have received from her. And you may have noticed in the order of service or in our email blast through Webvine that there will be a celebration of Adele's life next Sunday, June 27th at 1:30. It'll be on Zoom. It's not our usual Zoom link. It's a different link. So make sure you see that in the order of service or in the email that was sent out. So now let's take a moment to reflect on our own joys that are in our own life that we're savoring in this moment, and or recognize our own concerns or sorrows that our heart is holding. And as we pause during this musical interlude, you can decide whether or not you want to share them with this community, and if so, you can write them in the chat, and those will be read by our chat chaplain, Preston, or you can use the raise hand function, and you can speak those aloud, and you'll get some instructions from the moderator. So let's listen to the musical interlude.
We will bring this time of sharing to a close by singing Spirit of Life. The words will appear momentarily here on the screen.
Today, I will extinguish the chalice with words from Elizabeth Selly Jones. You're invited to say the words along in unison, which will appear on the screen in a moment. We extinguish this flame, but not the light of truth, the warmth of community, or the fire of commitment. These we carry in our hearts until we are together again. And now we will have our closing song, hymn 338, I Seek Spirit of a Child. And I would invite you to sing aloud with the closing song. The words will be in the video.
Just a smile and shines that light on all we see.